India is a land of festivals. There are so many beautiful festivals that are celebrated almost every month in India. The festivals, however, differ. Some festivals are of great celebrations. For example, the festival of Diwali. The beautiful new clothes, the variety of sweets, homes that are beautifully lit up, and the closeness of the family members that shares greetings. But today, we are going to speak about the festival of Shivratri. This festival is literally just around the corner. Unlike the other festivals, Shivratri has a more demure, softer, gentle feeling of celebration. There is a kind of sacredness or purity in the atmosphere. What is Shivratri and how is it celebrated? This is our topic for today. Please join me to welcome Sister Jayanti, the European Director of Brahma Kumaris. Om Shanti.
Om Shanti.
Sister Jayanti, Shivratri is a festival which is very, very beautiful. It's celebrated greatly in India, but it's also celebrated by many Hindus who are outside India. Is there a universal significance of Shivratri?
I believe there is, because my understanding is that Shiva is the name that we use for the Lord, the Supreme, the Divine, because the word Shiva means the benefactor, the creator, the point, the seed. All these terms come within that concept of this word Shiva.
The benefactor,
the creator,
the creator,
the seed,
the seed
from whom creation emerges, and the point.
The point.
And so just that tiny little word Shiva is telling us a lot of information about who God is and what God's qualities and tasks are. And so we love this word Shiva very much and we use it a lot.
Sister Jayanti, who is Shiva?
For me, Shiva means that being of light who is the supreme. And I know that for some, when they think about Shiva, they associate the word Shiva with Shivan Shankar, and they have this masculine image, this masculine form, very often with a snake around his neck or seated in tapasya in front of the Shivalingam.
Yes, because these are, when we speak about Shivaratri, we go to the Shiva temple, and these are the images that we see in front, Shiv Shankar, the Shivalingam. Is there a difference?
I think so. Let me try this out, and you can see if it works for you. When you think about that point of light, then that light is the light that has been remembered in all traditions throughout history, through all ages. And it's a symbol, the memorial of the divine, of the supreme. And it refers to the one who's the parent of the whole of humanity. Not just of one part of humanity, but truly the supreme. And when people had visions of this light, what they saw was the light and the light radiating in an oval form. And they put this into a diamond, they put this into marble or stone, and they gave it a flat base so that it could be easier to worship it, and they called it the Shivalingam. Now, people have other interpretations of this that I'm aware of, but I don't think that that's the case. I think it's this memorial of this point of light and this oval image, and then simply the worship, the flat base being given.
You spoke that this Shivalingam could be in a diamond form, but I've seen many Shivalingam quite black in color.
Sure, nowadays they have them in marble, they have them in granite, they have them in stone. But usually what they do is to try and find an image that has been naturally formed rather than being carved or crafted by human hands. That it's actually the memorial of that supreme being who is the parent of the whole of humanity. But then there's another image, this idea of Shiv Shankar. And they show this image, the one doing tapasya. But that's a very human form and a very masculine form. and we call God Mother and Father. When I say Mother and Father to the point of light, I can feel the love and the strength and the happiness, but I can't say Mother and Father to this masculine image. It's not possible. And also, this particular image is very specific to Hinduism and to India. It's not a universal image.
Ah, so I see. The image of Shiv Shankar not only is just masculine, but it's also restricted to Hinduism.
One religion.
And yet not universal.
Mm-hmm. And so I think that Shankar is actually part of what is called the Trinity, Brahma, Vishnu, Shankar. And God is the supreme, the creator of the Trimurti, the three forms, the three images. And so God doesn't play one role of creator, sustainer, destroyer. He's not one, but he's the one above all three. And so God is the one who's actually the supreme, who's remembered throughout all ages as that light. And so my understanding is that Shankar refers to another image, the image of the destruction of evil, and the image of tapasya, of intense meditation with which evil can be destroyed.
And this is the evil within you.
The evil within me and the evil of the world, because we talked about Shivratri. And so the memorial of this is that God, Shiva, comes into the world at a time when it is the night, when there's darkness. And he comes, and by his coming, he's able to dispel the darkness so that then the light comes and the day is able to begin. And so Shivratri is the memorial of God's incarnation on earth to bring about the day.
You spoke about this period of darkness. Is it this specific period of darkness that you're talking about?
Yes, I believe that this particular time that we're going through now is that same period in which Shivratri is being celebrated. I believe that this is that absolute time here and now, that when we look at the way thinking goes in the East, and they talk about a cyclical time, they talk about a golden age, a silver age, a copper age, and an iron age. And the description of the golden age is that world of truth, the world of love and happiness. Then that slightly diminishes, decreases, and you get to the silver age, and things turn around, and sorrow and turmoil and suffering begin, and you have the copper age, and all this intensifies, and you come to the iron age. Now, I definitely don't think it's the golden age now, or even the silver, or even the copper. I think we're at this time, in that period, which is described as Kali Yuga, the age of death, the age of the machine, the age of darkness.
You spoke about the age of machine, the age of darkness, but there is so much progress out there. We've moved on from civilization to civilization, from the Stone Age to such modern technological advancement. How can this be but progress?
You can see that there's technological advancement, but if I see the condition of the human soul, then I see that the values and the moral standards that we had have been coming down and down and down. And many people would agree that at this particular time, we are at a stage of spiritual bankruptcy, in which falsehood is being labeled as truth, and whatever is artificial is being positioned as real, and truth really has no place in the world today. It's been totally thrown out.
So in this period of darkness that you have described, one can actually, yes, clearly see the technological advancement or scientific advancement, and yet the decline of morality and values,
but also the loss of human happiness. It's not just a question of morals, but morals are also connected with the human experience of life. And if I look around the world today, whether it's the first world or the developing world or any part of the world, is there anyone who can say that yes, everything is okay in my life in terms of health and wealth and relationships and all of these things?
No.
Not a single person. Some places, maybe they enjoy good health, but they don't have the facilities that science offers, and they don't have those comforts, or maybe they don't have enough wealth even for survival. And some places will say that yes, we have wealth, but definitely in those countries you don't see happiness, you don't see love. And so truly, it's a time in which there's darkness for everyone. Nobody is here who has the composition of all of the ingredients that make up a satisfactory human life.
So the age of darkness exists. We need God to come. We hear this all the time. God has come, or God will come. How? When? How will he come?
God is a being of light, and he's up above in that dimension of light. And human souls have taken this physical form, and we are playing our role on the world stage, but it's one that's becoming more and more distressing. It's one in which there's more and more shortages, and all our resources are being finished, and you can see all the figures and see everything is now diminishing in terms of the external world. But the population is increasing. But human souls here at this moment aren't in contact with the one above. So God up there and me down here, how am I going to understand what it is that God wants to tell me? And so God comes in a human form. God incarnates into the physical dimension of the world.
So he will need to take a human form?
Mm-hmm. That's the only way in which he can explain to us what it is we need to do.
I guess if he came in any other form, we would not recognize him, would we?
Well, there isn't really any purpose in coming in a non-human form. But the fact that he has to communicate with humans means that it's a human voice that he'll speak through. And so I believe this is what has happened. I believe that 75 years ago, was the first Shivratri when God actually descended on the earth and took a human chariot and started to speak through that human form.
And the name of that human form?
This person was an ordinary person going about his own business, his life, his work, a special person, but yet still very ordinary like any other person. And he had a series of visions, and his name at that time was Dada Lekraj. And the visions he had were of God, of transformation, of a new world about to come. And when he saw these things, his life was transformed.
Dada Lekraj was a regular gentleman, just like, what, a family man or...
He was a family man, he was in business.
He was.
Yes, he was a devout Hindu, he was studying the Gita every day, he spent time in meditation, he had a series of gurus, and so he was very human.
And he had these visions of...
And the turning point was when he had a series of visions. And as a result of those visions, his life was transformed. And as people collected around him to hear him, because he was sharing these things, their lives were touched. And many, many, many people decided that they wanted to come together and be part of a community. And through that period then, he was given the name Brahma Baba. And so Brahma Baba became the founder of a spiritual university, where at that time in 1937 there was a group of 300 people who were studying with him, and that would have been a majority of women, because even today when you have a spiritual gathering you usually find it's more women than men. So a lot of women came together, a few men, some families, and they started to understand these ideas, and they began to realize that they had to change themselves.
You said the word that a community was formed through Brahma Baba, and you mentioned that they were studying.
Mm-hmm. They were studying spiritual knowledge, and it was knowledge about the self, knowledge about God, knowledge about the law of karma, cause and effect.
When you say about studies or spiritual education, the thought that comes in my mind is education is equal to syllabus.
Mm-hmm.
So is there?
Yes, they had four subjects that they were studying. And today also when someone comes to us at the spiritual university, there are these four subjects that we study. One is deepening our knowledge of spirituality, understanding the body of teachings. The second is the meditation, the practice of the consciousness of connecting with God. The third is the transformation in our practical lifestyle, because when I start understanding things and my perspective and my vision changes and I start meditating, then this has an impact on my lifestyle. And so we call this application of knowledge in life, the third subject. And the fourth subject, we believe very deeply that an important part of human life is not to exist just for yourself, but to be able to serve. And so seva, service, is a very important ingredient. And so we have these four subjects that we study, and we practice these ideas in our lives. At that time, a community was formed that became the foundation. But today, people across the world study these teachings each day at a center. They go to the center to meditate and listen to these ideas. And then the rest of the day, they're at home or with their family or at work or whatever it is that are their responsibilities. But they're using these ideas to transform their consciousness and their behavior so that their life now is able to shine with God's love, with God's light.
An education has an aim and object, for example. If I study medicine, I'd be a doctor. If I study veterinary, I'll be a vet. If I study these four subjects, what am I going to become?
Well, you immediately become a better human being.
Mm-hmm.
And as you uncover your own original highest qualities, you reach your own highest potential, which is what study is about. It's uncovering that which is the highest within you. It's not just feeding you with information, but to draw out that which is the highest. And so what this education does is to draw out that original state of purity, peace and happiness, which is what the soul is comprised of anyway, but we forget. And so we accumulate dust along the way in our human journey. But through these four subjects, we're able to cleanse the soul and come back to my own original pure state.
And where will I then, and then I'll be living here in the age of darkness with all this purity and cleansing that has taken place? Wouldn't I be too pure for this place?
I think two things happen at the same time. As human beings go through their transformation, which happens through God's knowledge and God's intervention, Shivratri is a reminder that it's not only a few human beings who are transformed, but darkness is eliminated from the entire world so that a world of light may begin. Perhaps you recall I mentioned cyclical time. And so what happens after the night? The day comes. That's natural. And so after this period of darkness of the Iron Age, it's not that there's an end and finish and curtains down, that's it. But no. What we're doing now is preparing for the next phase. And the next phase is that of the Golden Age, the Age of Truth. The world when there is light in the world. And so at the time of darkness, God, the Son, appears and the Son eliminates the darkness and brings about the day.
What kind of life will it be there? What is this place that you mentioned about the Golden Age?
When
do we have scientific advancement there? How better is it from here?
When God comes in the night, the very purpose of God's coming is to dispel the darkness of ignorance. And so that age of truth, the Golden Age, I believe is the age in which everyone is fully conscious, fully aware of their own spiritual identity. And because they have this awareness, then they're connected with truth, they're connected with purity, and there's absolute love and happiness. When you don't have purity, you don't have peace, you don't have happiness.
But it would still be on this earth.
It will be here on this earth, but the period of the Iron Age will have finished and will have gone away and given way to a new era, the Golden Age. But that task of creating the Golden Age is happening now through the transformation of the human spirit, because you can create a beautiful garden, but if you've still got people who are going to pull up the roots and destroy all the beautiful flowers, then there's no point. But if you've got human beings who've learned how to come back to curtsy, to behavior which is filled with love and peace, then yes, you can have a beautiful garden. And so the change of the human spirit and the change of matter happens through God's intervention.
So human beings become pure and beautiful, and matter becomes rejuvenated, cleansed,
yes,
for these human beings to enjoy.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So that sounds like a very hopeful message.
It's a message of hope, it's a message of joy, it's a message of God's love. God loves his children so much that he doesn't want to see us suffering anymore. So he leaves his home of silence and steps into the human dimension to take a human form, to come and teach us all of these things and remind us of all of these things and show us how we can connect with him and again have that state of yoga, which is the key to transformation.
It sounds very, very beautiful. But Sister Jenti, is it possible for you to take us to this experience of what that world would be like?
Let's try. Aware of the soul, I connect with the divine. I focus on the supreme, the being of light. This is Shiva, the benefactor, the light, the seed of the entire human world tree. I connect with Shiv Baba, and as I do so, I am fulfilled. My father has been waiting for me. My father gives me everything that I need. And in this connection with my parent, thank you. As I fill myself, I can feel the joy, the love, the purity, and the peace. I'm here in my home, in the world of light, having filled myself with these treasures. I step back onto the world stage, but now filled with love, so that my communication with each one is simply through the eyes. I can feel happiness radiating and happiness being shared with all, having taken all of God's treasures. This is what I want to do. I want to simply share each one. Om Shanti.
Om Shanti, Sister Shanti.
Om Shanti. Om Shanti. Om.